All right, welcome back to another episode of Just Buy Less Coffee, answering the deeper questions of American politics. My name is Troy, aka Keep Troy Blue. With me, as always, is Kathy Cannon, aka Cannon's Fodder. We are back and better than ever, clearly. So we're hanging in there. Kathy had some health issues. I had a complete mental breakdown. Needed rest. But yeah, we're hanging in there. We got some Trump tariffs. We're all liberated from our wallets because of Trump tariffs. We got Cory Booker goes on a 25-hour bathroom break or wore a diaper. Cannot confirm. But lots been going on. So let's get into it. First of all, it's April 5th. It's the hands-off protests all over the country today. I'm starting to see some images from that trickling in. Have you heard about that? Have you been plugged into that at all?
I've seen like people posting that it was happening. I haven't left my house yet today because I live in Florida, and that's probably, you know, a smart move for me because protests, Florida, Kathy, stay home.
Right.
Don't feel like getting shot and or run over. So
recording this on Saturday, we'll see how that turns out. There's supposed to be some pretty decent nationwide protests. Everybody stay safe. Maybe we'll check in on that later during the show. Trump's tariffs are causing what, the fourth, fifth, just a complete economic collapse of our lives, Kathy?
I don't know. Let's count them. We had dot-com in 2001, right? We had recession in 2008. The first one I think we were cognizant of. Like, I'm sure like there were a couple in the 80s, but we don't know, right? We weren't paying attention.
As 90s babies, we were used to sort of the economy getting better and better and better until it didn't.
Those days are long gone. What is it? We were at the best time to be kids and the worst time to be adults.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. So yeah, 01, 08, 2020, and here we are again.
Yep.
Here we are again.
This so fourth time millennials get to millennials.
Fourth once in a lifetime economic crash. Way to go, everybody.
I feel so good being dead inside.
Way to overachieve.
It's so liberating. We're 4 for 4 on that one, so that's good.
Killing it.
Trump's tariffs, the entire world's economy. Well, mostly just the U.S. I think the world's doing okay. Stocks around the world are dipping, but it's at a complete crash in the United States after Trump unveils worldwide tariffs, basically declaring economic warfare on the entire fucking world. Something like 124 countries or whatever, unveiling tariffs, massive tariffs on China, on some of these other
tariffs
countries.
On penguins, Troy. He just picked
just arbitrarily like picking islands, and the way they're like trying to spin that is just absolutely fucking hysterical. Islands off the coast of Australia or something like that. So we tariffed Australia. We did not tariff Russia.
Isn't that strange? Isn't that peculiar? We did tariff Russia's Ukraine, though, I'll notice.
Yeah.
Odd how that works.
China, North Korea, Japan, tariffs on Japan, tariffs on the UK, the European Union, Australia, Vietnam, all these nations. 34% tariff on China as part of this Liberation Day, on top of two rounds of 10% tariffs earlier. So the effective tariff rate on China is now 54%. China's 54. Retaliated by imposing 34 on us because that was the Liberation Day tariff. But the effective tariff rate on China is 54%. Stocks in a free fall, trillions in values lost. I know a lot of people, it's not popular.
$5 trillion.
It's not popular to like sort of simp for the stock market, but that is the way when stocks are really bad like this, that is actually really bad for everyday people, not just for rich folks. 401ks disappearing, companies laying people off, a lot of retirement accounts going away, savings accounts going away. People are going to lose their jobs. This is bad. This is about as bad as it gets for a week on the economy.
Yeah, I thought it was especially funny how like the March jobs report came out yesterday and the stock market was crashing at the same time. So the dichotomy of those two things were fucking remarkable to me, because when we see the April jobs report, that's going to be hilarious because it'll be a direct result. Like, you'll be able to see so clearly the impact of the tariffs, because March was fine before you did all of this. Then you said it, then the market crashed, and then the April jobs report. We literally entered a bear market. Like, S&P literally entered bear market. NASDAQ literally entered a correction. Like,
Yeah.
38,000. We are in the 38s again on the stock market. I want to point out 2 months ago, we were at 44,000. We are in 38 now. And it's been like a couple of weeks.
Last year, the Biden administration was basically breaking a new record every couple of months. I mean, we got up to, 45, 46? And now we're back below 40. We're at 38 in a matter of days. Two consecutive 2,000-point drop-offs, just a complete free-for-all sell-off on the markets as people are terrified that a recession is coming because of these asinine tariffs. Completely self-engineered recession, not a natural recession, not a natural contraction of the economy, which is supposed to occur every few years. This is completely fake, manufactured, some might say intentional. But we had a great guest on last time, Catherine Ann Edwards. Did I say that right? Catherine Ann Edwards?
Yes, you did. Catherine
Ann Edwards. Yeah. Bloomberg economist. Great. You did a great job, Kathy. That was a great episode. Thank you for talking to her.
I want her to be my best friend.
she should be a good friend of the show. She's great.
The Catherines of the world should just take over is what I'm saying.
So that was good. But talking about a recession coming, but she talked a lot about how this is completely avoidable. This is not, this didn't need to happen. There was no universe in which we were naturally heading towards a recession under Biden, under Kamala Harris. The economy was going to continue to grow this year. Growth was going, inflation had hit a soft landing. The economic growth was going to continue. And now we're looking at, recession.
Another 2008. That's what we're looking at.
Now we're looking at market crash. Of monument proportions on top of inflation coming from these tariffs. So give me some economic assessment. You're the economist. You got to talk to the economist last time. So tell me what your predictions are here. Are we coming towards another Great Depression here? Because this has the potential of getting really bad.
Well, like, to answer that is I'll be like every other economist in the world and say, well, it depends on a few variables, because it does. It depends on a few variables, right? I'll start with like answering a couple of the questions that I've gotten, especially from like the kids who watched the market collapse right after they like played out a trade war in real time, right? They asked me like basically, what does a stock market crash mean? Like, because they were reading the headlines too. They're like, what does it mean? $5 trillion disappeared. Like, where did it go? And I said, it disappeared, like woof, gone. Like, what does that mean? And that, I understand, doesn't make a sense to a lot of people who aren't like tuned into macroeconomic policy and how it works. But like, markets are built on margins. And this is sort of how 2008 went wrong, right? And like, I explain it to the kids, if it works, like if everybody does what they're supposed to do, it works fine, right? Because the stock market is based on leveraged assets, based on like what the stock is selling for. So if the stock is worth this, then that says the company's worth this. So they can borrow against that perceived value. And they use that to invest in the company or do whatever it is they do or pay off their shareholders or whatever the fuck, right? But if that stock starts to fall below the value that they've borrowed against it, that means they now owe more than they're worth. And this is sort of like, it will sound familiar to people who struggled in the housing market in 2008, right? If you bought your house for $500,000, the market collapses and it's only sellable for $300,000, you're underwater $200,000, right? You're going to let that foreclose. You're not going to pay off a mortgage you owed that much on, right? Well, that's sort of what's happening with these companies. They've borrowed $50 billion when their company was worth $60 billion, but now their company's only worth $30 billion, so they owe an extra $20 billion, and now they're going to have to start laying people off. Lay people off, people lose jobs, consumer spending falls, aggregate demand falls, GDP falls, so on and so forth. So where'd the money go? It never really existed in the first place. It wasn't going to exist until those loans, like, materialize, like once those loans were paid off. Now the money is there, but now those loans won't be paid off. You're going to start seeing people file for bankruptcy or debt relief and things like that. And that money has been spent, never existed, and is now gone. And that is why the bottom collapsed. Did you follow that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a big, big shit show. Absolutely.
But all of this is based on, because the follow-up question is, well, why did he do this then? Well, to your point, like, he could be doing it on purpose to tank the economy because he's a fucking monster. That is one option. The other is he's a fucking idiot who doesn't understand trade deficits. And this is probably more likely because, as we have learned, they use.
I think it's I think it's both, but continue. I'll give you my rationale.
It's fair that it's maybe both, but like from what I saw, like they've used a chat GPT or like an AI bot to basically calculate these tariffs based on trade deficits, which tells me they don't understand trade deficits, right? Because yes, we do buy more goods and services from China than they buy for us, but they are a manufacturing-based economy. We are a service-based economy, right? We're tech innovation. We're all that. We are not the warehouse of the world anymore. That was us in the 1950s and 60s.
Nor should we be, to be frank, but that's a whole other conversation.
Well, our economy has just changed. Like, economies evolve, right? Like, once upon a time, we were agrarian. Then we were industrial. Now we are tech and service. Like, that's just how economies evolve, right? So there's two different types of accounts when you're talking about trade deficits. There's the current account, and that is where goods and services and income transfers are going, right? In our current account with a lot of these countries, we have trade deficits because we buy more goods and services from them. But it's like I tell the kids, America's number two or top two exports to the world, weapons and money, right? So in our capital accounts or our financial accounts or our investment inflows, we have a gigantic trade surplus because countries buy our trade. You know that $37 trillion debt we're always talking about? Yeah, that's other countries buying American currency, buying American treasury notes, investing in America's money because our money is so stable and our economy is so strong that it can literally finance the whole world. And in that account, we have huge trade surpluses. So every country with whom we have a trade deficit in our current account, we have a trade surplus that is either equal to our goods deficit or better than our goods deficit. So we make more money off of these countries than they make off of us. They just make money selling us stuff, and we make money selling them our money. And we're doing better in that scenario and have been for a very long time. But that will not be true anymore because, one, the tariffs are going to screw up the current account because, like, we're not going to be able to afford to buy stuff from China the same way. They're not going to want to do business with us the same way. And they're sure as shit not going to be investing in our currency anymore. So we're going to lose our trade surplus in our current account or our capital account. And we're going to lose our trade partnerships in our current account. So we've basically blown up both. Because it's like Donald Trump says he wants a strong dollar, right? And a strong dollar usually means that you can easily buy goods from other countries because the purchasing power of your currency is strong. A weak dollar like China has, like, well, it's not a dollar, but you get like a weak currency is good for exporting because it makes your stuff cheap. That's why China kind of pegs their currency. They very much manipulate their currency, but we know they do that. But it's benefited us because it makes their shit really cheap for us, right? So Donald Trump says that he wants a strong dollar and no trade deficit, but that's like a vegan saying they only eat brisket. And like, it just doesn't make sense to anybody.
Vegan brisket is terrible, by the way.
Vegan brisket is terrible, which is probably, but that's the thing. If you have a strong dollar, that means you want to buy you want to buy imported goods. Strong dollar, good for buying imports. Weak dollar, good for selling exports. But Donald Trump wants to somehow have a strong dollar and sell more exports. You literally can't do that. That's like, I'm going to quit smoking except for pot. You're still smoking, right? Or quit smoking and start vaping. Like, you're doing the same thing. Like, I don't know. Vegans eating brisket.
It's saving your virginity, but only doing it in the... No, never mind.
Honestly, that was a very inappropriate metaphor you were about to make, but yes, correct.
But yes,
like that song, sort of the like same do thing. It in the butt or whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of that stupid. So yes, anybody who did well in economics at any level, even high, like my AP macro kids understand this better because like, as I explain it to them, they go, well, why would people vote for this? And I said, because they slept through my class, kid. I don't know.
What he's doing makes absolutely no sense, but he has been obsessed with tariffs his entire life for some reason. It's just what he sort of gets. It's what he dreams about. It's like he has sexual fantasies about like tariffs aren't exactly like, a global tariff protectionist policy is not something that has really been in fashion for many decades. We believe
about 10 decades.
About 10 decades. We value free trade because it's better for everybody. Does it always work perfectly? No. People get hurt in the process, but it's a hell of a lot better than, you know, 40-50% unemployment because you live in a protectionist economy and you can't sell your goods anywhere, which is kind of where we're headed. And no, nobody's going to be buying American goods. I mean, they're already talking about ways to avoid products from the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, the world is, we are the enemy, the economic enemy, at least, of the entire world. We put tariffs on Israel. Mm-hmm. The only major nation we didn't put tariffs on was Russia.
Isn't that weird?
The United States just became the economic enemy of the entire world. Trump insists that some nations, and this might be true, some nations will want to negotiate. China didn't. China went immediately to retaliation. I think most of Europe is going to go right to retaliation. Yeah. Canada and Mexico obviously are going right to retaliation. So we're royally fucked. We're royally fucked when it comes to what the next few years look like. And thankfully, Congress is kind of growing a spine. I don't know. I think the worst things get, Congress will be forced to act because people don't like you fucking with their money. I don't care how much these people support Trump and they start losing millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of assets, billions of dollars worth of assets.
Daily, by the way.
They're going to start going after Donald Trump. Yeah, ideally.
Well, there's you know how I love it when America is painfully ironic, right? So like Donald Trump's Liberation Day, April 2nd, he announces these tariffs. The next day, literally the next day, is the anniversary of Truman signing the Marshall Plan.
God.
The extremes there, right? We go from shutting off the world and charging everyone tariffs, like the day before we celebrate America helped rebuild Europe.
And the rationale that he's using in this like chart, these reciprocal tariffs chart, is a big fucking lie, by the way. He's got all these people convinced that like Vietnam has 90% tariffs on the United States. All these numbers are completely made up. Like the China 34% thing, these numbers are completely made up. These numbers are trade deficits, not tariffs. They're just using funky math. It's a complete lie. It's a complete Donald Trump lie. Yes, countries do impose tariffs on limited tariffs on the United States. We impose limited tariffs until this on other countries. For example, European Union tariffs the shit out of American food. They don't want American food in Europe. But by and large, everything else before this, everything else was pretty much one for one with the EU and the United States. We pretty much weren't tariffing each other. Now it's going to be, I mean, they're actively just, we just lost Europe. We lost Europe and Asia as overseas markets for American companies. And that means American companies are going to start laying people off right at around the time that these tariffs are going to start making everything more expensive. So this is the worst of all possible outcomes for no reason. Like, we cannot stress this enough. There's no reason to do this. There's no problem. There's no problem that they're fixing by doing this. The economy was doing just fine.
Well, just fine is like a bit of a stretch. Like, we still have like all of the Reagan era problems, right?
Well,
but like in terms of what we're used
big
to.
Big picture problems, yeah.
Yeah.
The economy was doing fine day to day. We still have sort of the structural deficiencies from Reagan, right. But yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like, if
which they're trying to blame on Biden, by the way. Wages are too low and like there's no stagnant growth and it's trickled out. Like, that's Reagan. Like, that's,
well,
you think that's,
yeah,
new? You think that started in 2022? Like, that's not a Biden issue. Yeah.
It did not, right? Like, basically Reagan walked so Donald Trump could run with a blowtorch. Okay. So like, if you want, like, I can, this is a 40-year slow walk to exactly what's happening now, right? Reagan,
yes,
hollowed out the middle class, right? Like, he cut taxes for the rich, he deregulated everything, declared war on unions, and created this like trickle-down myth, right? From there, it was like Bill Clinton sort of like polished the hood ornament of the car, if you will. So like, Reagan gave Wall Street.
He was polishing a lot of hoods.
That's actually probably funny. All right, so imagine this. So if the American economy is a car, okay, Reagan handed the keys to Wall Street, like basically took the keys away from the middle class, handed them to Wall Street and said, go fucking drive, right? And they are driving recklessly and benefiting only themselves and basically running over children in the way, okay? Like, quite literally in some cases.
just taking out old people on the sidewalk.
Just taking out old people, taking out kids, like, you know, like fucking Christmas bonus if I knock out grandma, like double my pay if I hit the kids at the inner city schools, right? Throw some black people in prison, double down, right? basically, yes. So then Bill Clinton takes over and he like puts a new hood ornament on it, but polishes it and says it'll be fine now. Now the car is going to help everybody. And to be fair, it does a little bit because the hood ornament slows the car down a little bit and, you know, spreads out some wealth, gives the kids some time to get out of the fucking way, right?
Left office with a surplus. That's, you know, whatever he did that, say but about Clinton.
He also kind of continued some of the deregulation that like, created bigger problems, right? So was his economy good? Yes. But did he do anything to fix the problems Reagan created?
No. Not structurally. Right?
He basically took what Reagan broke and he's like, I can make it work. Watch me make it work. And he made it work within the system that it was existing in. And we could have continued within that system. And that would have been a good balance between, you know, the Wall Street hacks want what they want, but we want to protect the middle class. Like Clinton was a good middle ground between those two forces, if that's what you wanted your economy to look like. Not me. I don't want it to look like that, but whatever. We're fine. So then George W. Bush takes the car and drives it straight into a ditch. Right? Like that is what he did quite effectively. He's like, this is a cool car. Crash. Okay, cool. So Obama comes
but
in.
But you really, like he literally had a DUI though. So like we're making like car crash jokes.
Which makes sense why he crashed it into a ditch. It's all tracking if you're keeping up with me, right? So then Obama comes
polishing hoods and Bush is crashing into a ditch.
Yeah, so you're coming with me. It's fine. So then Obama, his presidency essentially gets the car out of the ditch, right? Fucks with the hood a little bit and he gets the car, the engine's running, but it's idling, right? It's not, it's like we can turn it on. We can start pushing it. It's moving technically.
The car is totaled, but the engine is running.
Exactly. But it needs some fucking work, right? So Donald Trump comes in and he's like, you know what'll help this car? You know what'll help this car? Let's scrap it for fucking parts. So then while the car is like on the auction block, Biden comes in and he's like, how about I duct tape this bitch back together? Right? So he duct tapes the car back together. He gets it to the shop and he looks at it.
It's the car in Tommy Boy by the end of the movie, if anybody remembers.
Basically,
that
okay,
movie.
So Biden gets like the Tommy Boy car. Exactly. So Biden has the Tommy Boy car, right? And he gets it to the shop and he's basically like, okay, guys, I looked under the hood. If we do this, 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 and this, we can totally fix this shit. And Kamala's like, I have a degree in car fixing. Let me do it. And America was like, how about fill up the gas tank, give it to Donald Trump and light a match. And that is where we are.
Yeah.
And that is Kathy's economic metaphor of the last 40 years. I hope you enjoyed it. Troy is giggling like an idiot.
The car didn't have doors, a roof, a steering wheel, but somehow the engine was running and it was moving forward. And
Biden had it moving with sheer grit and determination.
Trump came in and lit the engine on fire and slashed all the tires, basically.
With the help of Peter Navarro and his AI fucking whatever.
How much can we milk this car metaphor? Anyway, it's funny as hell.
I don't know. I'm out of ideas, but I think I did a good job. You're red. Like, you are beat red laughing at me. That's how funny
I'm dying. Oh, my God. That was funny.
Vegans eat brisket and cars run into ditches. That is Kathy today. Just
the image of Obama, like, pulling a car out of a ditch. Just, like, sitting in it.
Make it run.
That's just funny. That's just really funny to me.
There you go. That's what I got. Kathy tells the economy in one sweet metaphor.
This is the other thing on this. Well, basically, there's a couple other. We talked about how tariffs are pretty old. This is kind of what Latin American economic policy in like the 50s and 60s, where like.
Which worked really well, by the way.
They had a good reason for doing it, at least, because they were so manipulated by the IMF, the World Bank, the United States controlling the hemisphere that they wanted to establish their own. I mean, these countries were owned by United Fruit, all this stuff.
Literal banana republics.
Yeah, literal banana republics. They had a good reason for doing it. They wanted to establish their own industries, but their protectionist economics did not work ultimately, and Latin American economies really struggled. And that's why you only do stuff like this, you only cut yourself off economically from the world if you're comfortable with 40, 50, 60% unemployment, 70% poverty, because there's just no way around it. You can't, basically you just opt out. You just opted out of wealth. You opted out of commerce. And it's fine if you have a good reason for doing that, but I don't, you know, Donald Trump does not have a good, who by the way is golfing at Mar-a-Lago as we speak.
Instead of greeting soldiers coming back that died. Yeah, I know.
He's been off since Tuesday. He skipped the dignified transfer of troops killed in Lithuania. And by the way, the whole time we're just like, you know, imagine if Biden did this. Imagine if Obama did this. Like
anybody other than Trump did this. Like, I don't know what he like what he got for selling his soul to get people to like be so fucking under his spell. But it's like it defies logic. Like the way he has people hypnotized into thinking he's brilliant. Like, what are you smoking? And can I have some? Because it will make this a lot less painful.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is this tech worry that nobody's talking about is that Trump's also sort of destroying Biden's Chips and Science Act. You know, Biden was setting us up to be energy independent in a manner of speaking on microprocessing technology, chips, computer chips, which are very difficult to manufacture, by the way. It takes a lot of time and resources to manufacture, you know, next-gen computer chips. Taiwan has a corner on the market. They manufacture about 90% of the world's microprocessing chips, which is why we get most of our shit from Taiwan. Most of our technology comes from Taiwan. Biden, through the Chips and Science Act, was trying to set us up to be independent so we'd have our own chips industry in case, oh, I don't know, China invades Taiwan and takes control of their chips industry. Now, Japan and South Korea this week also signed economic deals with China, probably because they see what's what's coming, which is that if China gets hold of Taiwan's chips industry, they control technology for the next century. And I'm talking, because chips are so difficult to manufacture, we may never catch up with China. And I'm talking like, do you like having internet? Do you like having...
Sometimes, Troy. Like, I don't know anymore.
Yeah. Do you like having a functioning cell phone? Because if we're in an economic warfare with China and they control our technology, let me tell you, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty for the next few decades.
And it's funny because, like, this is part of why the stock market's collapsing, right? Because he's openly talking about repealing the Chips and Science Act. The tariffs are exacerbating, like, you know, like what you were just saying. And, like, Silicon Valley is eerily quiet while I know they're freaking out. Like, you just know that, like...
I don't know what the fuck happened to the tech industry.
I don't know what's going on with them, right?
They used to be super left, and now they're just...
They were never super left. They saw that the left was willing to invest in innovation, whereas Republicans were like, let's go back to 1950. What they are is greedy and like the idea of low tax cuts, so they sold their souls for tax cuts. But now they're recognizing... True. Yeah, so now they're recognizing those tax cuts might not be worth bottoming out my entire industry, right? Like, a short-term tax benefit for the destruction of my industry not paying off for them quite the way they thought. But they're afraid, I think, to say anything because Elon Musk is a fucking lunatic in charge.
Well, especially if we lose the chips battle, and like, okay, like, what good is it? Google's going to move to China. I mean, like, what good is it? You know, the United States will be an economically dead country when it comes to tech.
Yep. It's just really bad. Like, and I'm a little bit worried. Like, I'm curious, actually, not worried. Worried that they won't like wise up and actually start saying anything, but curious as to when they will, because like they lost a lot of money. Like, where did most of that money disappear from? S&P is in a bear market, and S&P is where the tech stocks live, right? Like, so there's definitely some emergency board meetings happening in Silicon Valley right now about what they're going to do and whether or not they need to start leveraging their influence on the Trump administration to at the very least get Elon out. But Elon's not the one doing the tariff shit. He's doing the destroy the government shit. So
Elon's on his way out. Elon's looking at a complete Tesla collapse, and he's like, I need to go back to the Tesla boardroom and try to shore up whatever influence I have left.
I'm pretty sure they're gonna get, like, the second he shows up in that boardroom, they're gonna vote to remove him.
He should be fucking tarred and feathered in that Tesla boardroom.
That's next.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, as much as these guys, you know, Zuckerberg, Peter Thiel, all these tech guys that love Donald Trump, like, they're not going to fucking love him when their profits disappear. They're not going to fucking love him when their prices tank. I mean, you know, that this is the one time when like nihilistic capitalism comes in handy.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You can't fuck with these guys' money. They don't love you enough. They're not ideologically MAGA enough to love Trump when he fucks with their money.
Yeah, like NVIDIA is like the best option. Like, this time last year, everyone was like, this is the stock to invest in. It's going to boom. They anticipated it would hit like 140 to 210 at some point in the next year. And it lost 7% of its value yesterday alone.
See, this is fucking crazy. It's fucking crazy. So Dow Jones is basically the top 30 companies. Dow Jones is just a we looked at Dow Jones a lot, but it's basically the Dow Jones is just the top 30 companies as sort of like a baseline for how the economy is doing. Mm-hmm. The S&P is actually like where the majority of like the rest of those companies are. So the S&P is actually the one to watch.
Yeah. Well, like for an example, I just pulled up like the year to date for NVIDIA. So they opened the year January 2nd selling at $138 a share. They closed yesterday at $94.
Oof.
That's down 31.8% year to date. So basically, since Donald Trump became president, NVIDIA's stock has lost almost 32% of its value.
That's insane. And again, it's just, again, the stock market is not just about rich people losing money. This is 401ks. This is retirements. This is kids. This is people planning for their kids' education. And this is companies starting to lay people off because their profits are down, their stock prices are down, and they're losing overseas markets. So,
and they're over leveraged because
this is bad for everyone.
They were using those stock projections, right? Because because they were like the leader in like in the chip industry. They were like, they were going to be the new Apple. Like, I hate to put it like that simply, but they were probably like set to be that influential in the tech world like 10, 20 years from now, right?
Yeah.
And they're bottoming out because stupid policies of one man who definitely does not understand telecommunications. He doesn't understand technology. He doesn't understand trade deficits, nor does he understand international trade cooperate. So like, I don't know, man, I just work here.
Okay. Before we move on to Booker though, so let's talk about that real quick. What are your thoughts on motivation? Is he just a fucking moron and he doesn't care? Is this intentional? Because there's a strong argument to make that recessions are good for billionaires because they can come in the chaos and buy up all these properties cheap. Is he a Russian asset? And this is his way of destroying the United States. I don't know. What's your thought? Because what he's doing makes no rational sense. So he's either an idiot or he's got some kind of a motive here. I don't know.
It sounds like you want me to put my tinfoil hat on. Is that what's going on?
A little bit. I mean, and not, you know, but again, there's conspiracies like we didn't actually go to the moon. And then there's conspiracies like, you know, people are benefiting from this chaos. I mean, well, it's not a stretch.
Okay. So I would say initially, like long term, he might be hoping to making the housing market collapse because like, is that what's going to happen immediately? No. Like the housing market is overinflated. Part of the reason it's overinflated is because there's a supply shortage, right? Like when the recession hit in 2008, we had like this overabundance of houses and nobody that could afford them because of all the foreclosures, right? Because when the recession hit, people lost their jobs, they didn't have monies, they lost their homes, so those homes remained empty. That allowed for big fucking hedge funds and investment people to come in and swoop up and buy a lot of properties. It was the brief window where I found a house that I was able to like basically steal. I got really lucky in that regard. Thanks, Dad. Because I'm a teacher in Florida. Like I wouldn't have been able to do this without my dad helping me on a down payment, like 100%, right? Like, and not everybody is as fortunate as me, right? So that's why a lot of millennials still never were able to buy a house because the only time houses were affordable for us was also when we were making $12 an hour with our bachelor's degrees because those were the only jobs available in the market, right? Because 2008, 2009, that recovery period was the closest thing to real stagflation we'd seen since the 70s, which is coming, by the way, economic worst nightmare, stagflation, right? But this is hitting the economy in a more broad sense than the specific housing market, because like 2008 was very specific to subprime mortgages failing, overextended housing markets. It hit the housing market first and then kind of blew out through the rest of the economy, whereas this is kind of the opposite way. They're hitting the economy and like it will go through the rest. So ultimately, will people lose their houses? Possibly, because if they lose their jobs because of the economy or because they have to choose between a mortgage payment and feeding their kids when food prices soar. It's like, so ultimately, could it cause the same problem? Yeah. And would that be a good time for billionaires to come in and sweep up and buy property? Sure. But also the way they're doing it, they could create a situation where there are far fewer billionaires available to sweep up and buy the property, or maybe not billionaires, but millionaires, like the top 20%. So they're hurting like the top 20% to benefit the top 10%, but really benefit the top 1%.
It's the top 1% declaring war on like the top 20%.
We are basically, the people are hungry. They cannot afford bread. Let them eat cake. That is, like, I hate to put it as bluntly as that, but like, Donald Trump won by getting people to complain about egg prices, and egg prices have gone up, but not only egg prices, but chicken prices too, and all food prices, and gas prices, and everything else prices, and your health, like even your generic drugs are about to increase in prices because most of your generic medicines come from India. And what did he just put 40% tariffs on India for some reason? Like, what the fuck did India do? The reason we had a trade deficit with India is because they have the generic medicines and we buy the generic medicines because the name brand ones are too expensive because Big Pharma's fucked. Like, we're basically creating a perfect storm for corporations to bleed us fucking dry, and they are creating a peasant class, whether they're doing it on purpose or not. Don't know. Maybe they're just like hard on for feudalism and they want to see what it looks like in real life. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I just think that this is the final act in the Reagan trickle-down strategy.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Where they started with Reagan, they started with trickle-down, they started with busting unions and sort of chipping at the middle class. And this is like, all right, they waited 50 years and they haven't completely been able to create a peasant, you know, create a, a poor peasantry yet. So they were just going to kick it into overdrive. This is the thing that finally just causes like mass poverty if it's allowed to, you know, go through and Congress doesn't do anything to stop it.
So this is less like reckless economic policy than the inevitable consequence of Reagan's economic policy. Like, he introduced it and made it look pretty.
Restoring pre-Teddy Roosevelt industrial age, the Gilded Age, where it was just rich people and poor-ass factory workers. That was it.
Up to and including child labor here in Florida. Because
they're trying to bring back.
They're like, they signed the law already, I think, or they passed one of the chambers. I can't remember. It made me sad and I pushed it out of my brain. But like 14-year-olds can now work overnight in Florida on school nights. And they're trying to remove the mandatory break for 16 and 17-year-olds. So they want 16 and 17-year-olds to be able to work overnight on school nights without a forced break. So your kid gets off school at 3, takes a power nap, goes to work at 6, gets home at midnight, goes back to school at 7. No break in between, literally not even for dinner anymore. This is the world they want. Oh, and they're also in Florida right now, by the way. We have lost $37 million in funding in my county alone, my school, $800,000 specifically. They're going after my program, the AP program. They're gone. And they're removing all of the testing requirements, which sounds good on the surface because we all hate testing. But Florida high school graduates will no longer have to prove they can read, know science, or do math.
Well, yeah, while all this is going on, they're gutting education. I mean, cutting the Department of Education. Well, China is massively increasing investments in their education.
Yeah.
So we're also intentionally trying to dumb down the populace, to, you know, devalue education to the point where we're not going to compete.
Yeah, not just dumb them down. I didn't even tell you the better part. They want to replace the AP curriculum with Florida-specific curriculum that can only be accepted by Florida universities. So if you want to go to the University of Florida, you're going to have to take the Florida, you know, Florida AP, Florida Advanced Placement courses, not the College Board Advanced Placement courses that teach you the history Florida wants you to know that will be reinforced by Florida's universities. Tell me we're not talking about Hitler Youth.
Well, isn't Florida Southern Ivy? Like, I mean, Florida is a great University of Florida is a great school. I mean, I guess it won't be in a few years.
It won't be in a few years.
It'll be the, you know,
yeah, you're about to see
academy.
an intentional brain drain here, right? Like, to be fair, they did run Ben Sasse out on his ass, so that was good. So Florida
Sasse on his ass,
Sasse on his ass. But you know, like, I don't know. It's just so obvious to me what's happening and how, like, denial is a hell of a drug is what I will say. Like, I don't think it's that people don't see it happening anymore. I think it's that they want to ignore it happening because it's scary. And I can understand that on some level, but also that's how it gets scarier. So,
right. You know. All right. Cory Booker.
Yay,
let's talk
Corey.
Some Cory, some books. some C-books. Cory Booker sets the record for longest floor speech. I guess we can't technically call it a filibuster, which kind of pisses me off. I think it's perfectly fine to call it a filibuster. I mean, I think in modern times, a filibuster is just any time you're speaking for a long time. I mean, they use it sort of as a colloquialism in other mm-hmm. settings. Yeah. But anyway, he wasn't technically filibustering anything. It was just a floor speech. But anyway, he set the record, spoke for 25 hours, obviously intentional to break Strom Thurmond's record. The previous record was 24 hours and 19 minutes.
18 minutes and 24 seconds, if you want to be specific. 18 minutes.
Well, there you go. So he went to 25 hours before yielding the floor. I watched the last 10 hours of it. It was pretty freaking good, man.
All 10 hours? Like you sat and watched 10 hours straight?
I didn't sit and watch, but I went
like had
I
was, it on. Yeah,
I was doing running errands, working, doing, and I just had it on in the background. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 25 hours. Apparently, fasted for 3 days. So we're talking about bathroom breaks. Like you can't, if he leaves to go to the bathroom, they can take back the floor. Yeah. I think most people wear diapers in this situation. Cory Booker.
I love that. That's the number one question people have. They're like, "He must like."
It would be right because the biological.
It's the most human part of us. I know.
At that point, I mean, that's the protest, right? Is that you're mm-hmm. putting, you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you're not, you know, you're standing in one place. It's the physical stuff that really is sort of the heart of it. It's the marathon of it. Yeah. But apparently, he fasted for 3 days, didn't have any water for 24 hours. I couldn't do it, man. I'd pass out from hunger. I don't know how the fuck you pull off standing there without food for 3 days. Like,
well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like his preparation for the filibuster made it all the more difficult to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is I don't know, like, not to be all like whatever, but like that is divine intervention was on his side. That's the only thing I can say on that one. You know what I mean? And like, also, I'm very thrilled that I can take Strom Thurmond officially out of my lesson plan and I don't have to talk about him anymore. And I get to talk about Cory Booker. I don't have to say that the longest floor speech in history was to try to kill civil rights anymore. I get to say it was in protest of fascist authoritarianism, and that will feel better, until which point they drag me to the gulags.
Any reason to remember Strom Thurmond now? I mean, that was literally the only time he ever came up was when we were talking about filibusters. Let's see, I'm giving this one.
Or the party, well, because it was after that filibuster that he also said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left me. So he's basically like the siren light on, like, you know, the party switch.
Well, didn't he? Oh no, doesn't he have another record though? Wasn't he also the oldest? He served.
Yeah, he was like
105 or something.
102, like, I think.
Yeah,
and it was fucking weird. It was him and Jesse Helms were like the two fucking oldest. Yeah, but yeah, Strom Thurmond at the end of his career, like looking like a fuck. Like, remember how Jimmy Carter looked like a fucking skeleton in skin? Like, that's how Strom Thurmond looked, but he still was work in the U.S. Yeah, Senate.
He was on the floor of the Senate looking like a fucking skeleton. I remember that. It was scary. Like, how is this guy vertical?
He was disgusting. Like, he was a fucking skeleton.
So anyway, great, great speech. A lot of it, reading letters from his constituents, both Democrats and Republicans, mm-hmm. talking a lot about the deportations that are happening, telling these awful, awful stories of people, legal immigrants, people with green cards being deported, U.S. citizens swept up in this thing. A Canadian mm-hmm. living in the United States legally on like a student visa, arrested and sent to this like deplorable conditions where she's like housed with 40 other women. And there's like, it's just like inhumane, horrifying, you know, just awful. But he was talking about it on the floor. Mm-hmm. It got picked up by Fox. I mean, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. He got that stuff out there. He got the message out. And in an environment where people are looking for anything to be excited about because people are so exhausted and so just mm-hmm. beaten into the ground, I mean, the timing is right for that. I mean, a lot of people are being cynical about it, that it was just to benefit his career or whatever. He's trying to be mm-hmm. the next Senate leader. I don't know. I don't really care. I mean, I'm sure there are ulterior motives, but I think it was a big move and it was the right time for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's what I'm saying. Like, does he think that what he did might put him in the leadership or like in the running for leadership? Maybe, probably, possibly. Was that his driving force for doing it? Not a chance. Like, nobody wants to be
different.
Exactly. Like, nobody wants to be the Senate majority leader that badly. Okay. Yeah, he wanted to make a point that badly, and he did. But what I was
have
also
to do that to be the leader, by the way.
Exactly.
You don't have to not eat for 3 days to be the leader.
Yeah, you know, like that's not like the way to go, right? But I wondered a little bit while it was happening, like knowing he was going to beat Strom Thurmond's record, if that would get people to Google, well, who the fuck is Strom Thurmond? Because we know how little Americans know about their own history. And like, Strom Thurmond died in 2003. Like, he's not, like, he's a very old figure, but he also is not a very old figure because he stuck around so long, which speaks to a lot of problems in American politics, but a lot of problems with American conservatism, especially because the number of conservative leaders who are that fucking old, that like attended segregated schools, it's very telling that they want to like go back to a better time, because their better time is literally segregation, right? They don't want to say it, but they don't have to say it, because when they say go back to the glory days, they know what they mean, and everyone else does too. But like, I'd love to see people look up Strom Thurmond, start reading about him, and then like, his life story a little bit exposes the con of the Republican Party, if you think about it, you know. So that's a tip to anybody. Go Google him, look it up, look him up, and it'll be an enlightening experience.
Do you have the insider details about Thurmond's filibuster about what was
it was about the 1957 Civil Rights Act?
No, I know, but it was being like the details of it. It was being reported that by Fox News. That be, you know, there were no cameras that back then there were no, so there was no social media. It was being reported that Thurmond like fucking cheated, man. Like he took bathroom breaks. He went and got a sandwich. He allowed a vote to happen in the middle of his, like he yielded the floor for a vote. So there's some speculation that Thurmond's 24-hour filibuster was not at all authentic.
I mean, I don't know all that much. I haven't dug into it that much. I could, if you want me to, do some digging and find out, but I would say
he did read all 50 states, civil rights laws, like segregation. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Constitutions. Yeah. He read like all 50 states.
And he read the rules to playing cards. And I believe he read portions of David Copperfield. Or some book, I can't remember. It might have been David Copperfield. Somebody told me it was The Great Gatsby once, and I was like, he would not have been reading The Great Gatsby.
He's reading Gone with the Wind.
But I can look it up. Strom Thurmond filibuster. But
David
Copperfield, I don't know.
The novel, not the cheesy magician.
yes, there's a book, Kids of the World.
But anyway. Anyway, I think it was interesting, very clearly designed to break that record. So now, you know, Cory Booker is in the history books, definitely like upped his stock a little bit in the party. But it was great. I mean, it was good. It was inspiring. It was everything about it while you're watching it. Now everybody's getting cynical after the fact, but while you're watching it, it was a really good moment in American history. It felt very you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. It felt like that. It felt like, you know, sort of old school, like this is how government is supposed to operate. It was cool. It was pretty cool to watch. And I started watching it in the morning here in Europe. So it was like, you know, 3 a.m. when he was on the floor.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So I just found a quick thing. This is a quick little search. So logistics of Thurmond's filibuster have been described as, quote, kind of a urological mystery. Apparently he took regular steam baths leading up to the filibuster to draw out as many fluids from his body as he could, you know, dehydrating himself intentionally, which I guess Cory did with his fasting. He used methods to avoid leaving. It's been rumored within the African-American community that he used methods to avoid leaving for the restroom, stated that he wore a contraption devised for long motoring trips that allowed him to relieve himself on the stand. And longtime Capitol Hill staffer Bertie Bauman claimed in his memoir that Thurmond had been fitted with a catheter Thurmond was allowed to leave for the restroom one time, approximately 3 hours into the filibuster, when Senator Barry Goldwater, ooh, my guy, quietly asked Thurmond how much longer he could hold off using the restroom, to which he replied, about another hour. Goldwater,
3 hours in, and you, like, apparently
3 hours in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. No, this is Thurmond, not Corey. So Goldwater
But Thurmond was fasting too, and apparently it didn't work.
So Goldwater asked Thurmond to yield the floor to him for a few minutes, and Thurmond was able to use the restroom while Goldwater made an insertion to the congressional record. An aide had prepared a bucket in the Senate cloakroom for Thurmond to relieve himself if the need arose, but Thurmond did not end up using it. His health had become an item of concern by the evening of the 29th. Among his aides and the Senate physician, who threatened to personally remove him from the floor if senatorial staff could not convince him to end his speech. During the filibuster, he sustained himself on pieces of pumpernickel bread and small pieces of ground steak. He also brought throat lozenges and malted milk tablets onto the floor with him in his pockets. Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois brought Thurmond a pitcher of orange juice as noon approached on the 29th, but his staffer quickly put it out of his reach after Thurmond had drunk a glass to reduce the likelihood of him needing to use the restroom. So I don't think he had a catheter if they were that worried about him pissing and they had a bucket for him. So
they put a bucket back there. He wouldn't have had a catheter in.
But according to Wikipedia, those are the logistics of the filibuster.
Ah, the internet.
He had pumpernickel bread in his pockets like a true old man.
Pumpernickel bread.
That's the most old white man thing I've ever heard in my life. Pumpernickel bread and ground beef in his pocket.
They brought him a pot pie around hour 17.
I had some pasties in my pockets.
Again, I don't know. I hate to keep going on this, but I don't know how the fuck you fast. I would have, I would have just had a massive lunch before I started. And then
I don't know.
Worn a diaper. I could. The food would have been way more of a worry for me than the bathroom issues. I would have passed out.
Yeah, man. Hunger. I'm way too much of a fat ass to do that. So good for Corey, man. Good for Corey.
Well, he's a vegan. He's got all these weird, he went into ketosis or whatever. He very much did that Atkins type shit where he went into ketosis and was like burning his own fat to sustain himself.
Maybe he needed to fit into a dress for the weekend and it was just like double trouble, I'm kidding.
At the end, he started chugging water because his throat started to hurt, and you could tell he was doing a pee-pee dance. Or he could have just been pacing to keep from
stay awake or keep from his muscles cramping or something.
Muscle cramps. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it'd be easier now because protein bars, protein shakes, that can give you the energy to, one, energy to keep standing, and two, protein will trick your brain into thinking it's not as hungry.
He did have about 20 or so assistants. It started with Chris Murphy, who was up with him all night, interjecting every, 45 minutes or so with a question, allowing him to take short breaks so that they could post a question, which has kind of become the standard for the last few years.
I yield per question while maintaining the floor. We learned that from the West Wing. Remember the Stackhouse filibuster episode, which I show my kids to teach the filibuster because it's such a good job. It does such a good job of explaining what, because CJ in her letter to her dad, right? In case you don't know, the filibuster is.
I mean, a lot of people were saying that other Democrats should have come in, but I mean, they couldn't have because
been a lot.
Republicans would have just, as soon as Booker yielded, Republicans would have just adjourned the session, right? I mean, they couldn't just get someone else to come in.
Yeah.
If they had any sense that another Democrat was about to start one, they could have just adjourned the session, right? I mean that's
they would need a vote of cloture, and they wouldn't have had it. Yeah. A cloture vote is 60 senators.
Did they need a cloture on a floor speech though? Because he wasn't technically filibustering anything, or do they still need 60 votes to get him to shut up?
I think a cloture. Let me look.
If you have 60 votes, you can tell someone to shut up.
Let me do another search.
I don't know how they'd find six Democrats
my understanding is cloture is necessary. But I just looked it up. Cloture wasn't needed for Booker's speech. Senate methods of ending debate on a bill. when a filibuster is involved, take 60 votes. But since his wasn't technically a filibuster, well, he's just giving a speech.
It's a cloture vote to get it to bring the vote to the floor. So there was no vote. So
yeah, exactly. You
know, he could have talked for days if he had the ability to.
Yeah. Let me see what I can find really quick.
I think that's the case. I don't know that they, which is maybe why he did it that way.
Maybe I'm doing some quick canon research. Give me a minute. You can keep talking because I can do two things at once. I'm a teacher and all, you know.
Well, we're almost out of time. Just a couple other things. Democrats have been dominant in a string of special elections since November. The latest was this week was the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Heavily funded Elon Musk candidate loses to a relatively unknown Democrat in a blowout. Sort of a FU to Elon Musk there in Wisconsin. Before that, we had massive overperformances, you know, Democrats winning at like plus 21 Trump districts in Iowa, so like stuff like that. Like yeah. Delaware, Maine, Virginia, Iowa, Minnesota, a lot of Democratic victories in special elections.
Not Florida though. Sorry guys.
Not Florida. But overperformance in Florida. They like cut it was like a plus 30 Trump district and the Republican ended up with plus 15 or something like that. So it definitely cut into the Trump lead.
There are signs of hope, but not a lot of signs. Okay, I have my Senate rules up ready. So
okay, go.
When a senator has the floor, they own it. Under Senate rules, once a senator is recognized to speak, they can generally keep speaking until they yield the floor or violate a rule. So they couldn't have just like voted to shut him up. Like that's not how it works. There's no time limit on speeches in the Senate. And that is good because I teach my kids that. Like the reason the House has a rules committee and the Senate doesn't is because it's supposedly easier to control 100 people than 435. So there are no time limits on speech. That's why they can filibuster for one. But also if you have the floor, you own it. Okay. So Republicans couldn't just shut him up. They couldn't interrupt him. They couldn't cut his mic. They couldn't motion.
Unless he fucked something up. Unless he fucked something up and like accidentally yielded or left the floor or something.
Right. Things that could have shut him up, right? Like if he messed up, they could have called like a point of order, right? And they could have been like, he violated a rule, personal attack, profanity, rule, whatever. They could have done something like that. But I don't think he did that because he's Cory Booker. I don't know that he swears a lot in general. Like I would get shut down so fucking fast. Like I would violate rules.
Fucking motherfucker.
Like when people say, why don't you run for office? I'm like, I would get shut up every time I talk.
You dragging Kathy out, kicking and screaming from the podium.
I would get fined every other day for violating Senate rules of decorum. Okay, let's just be real. I might survive House.
Kathy like, just drops trout, pisses all over the floor.
I don't think I'd go quite that far. I verbally assault people, okay? That is what I do. Okay, so even the point of order thing, like, it would only work if the presiding officer sustained it and then they would have to win a majority vote, but it would be a simple majority. So, meh. They could have called for unanimous consent, right? Like, if everybody in the Senate was on board with
everybody. Like, if Sparks was giving a filibuster, you could have, like, unanimous consent to shut Victoria Sparks the hell up.
Right. So, like, every Democrat and every Republican, less Cory Booker, would have to be like, bro, shut the fuck up, right? But cloture would have ended all debate. So that would have basically ended the session. So
you could have had a cloture vote, but it would have just shut the whole thing down.
But it would have shut the whole thing down. Nobody would have been able to respond or anything. So unless he broke a rule or yielded the floor, they were stuck listening to him. He could have pulled, I don't know what I'm saying. Well, he essentially did what he did. He pulled like a filibuster-y thing that wasn't a filibuster, but had they done anything to shut him down, he could have talked about how they're violating even Senate rules as well as constitutional rules. I don't know. Basically, once you're up there, you're kind of untouchable unless you done fucked up.
Well, they were just looking. They had GOP senators in the room just looking for him to fuck something up. And he came close a couple of times, you know. As easy as just saying he had to maintain every single time that he was not yielding the floor. He had to, because if he had just said, I yield for a question, you know, they could have said that he had yielded the floor.
Right. And that's why he was very clear. I yield for a question while maintaining the floor. Like that last little bit while maintaining the floor was a very important little lesson.
Yeah. But he did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Badass. He held it together. Yeah.
He did good.
Pretty cool. Anything else? We are just about out of time. Kathy, it's so good to see you. It's good to be back.
I know. I'm glad we're all settled and back to feeling healthy and not in hospitals and or, you know, mental breakdowns.
Yeah, totally.
Both of those things could have been true for either of us, I'd like to point out.
Yeah.
Teaching in Florida is a bear, man. That's all I can say. Feel bad for me.
Yeah. Bear markets, bear teaching in Florida. That's just all.
There you go. Look, full circle. Barren.
Hey, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/justbuylesscoffee. Get some extra content, bonus content that the regular public doesn't get to see. Watch the video content on YouTube, youtube.com/justbuylesscoffee. And wherever you're listening to the show on Apple, Google, or Spotify, make sure you're clicking that download button. Downloads are how we're ranked with other news and political podcasts. Thank you, everybody, so much for bearing with us. And for
Can I do coming. One shameless plug before
Please
we go?
Please do.
I forgot to tell you I wanted to do this, so man, my bad. But I have been writing again. So in my social media rest, my brain doesn't stop. So I had to write because my doctor told me to stay off the fucking internet for a couple of days and get better. So I have a Substack. I have been writing. And Troy, I haven't told you this part, but it's like the coolest thing about me. Matthew Winkler paid for my Substack.
Yeah, that's right.
The former co-founder and former editor-in-chief of Bloomberg News paid $50 to read my stuff for a year, and I jumped up and down like a giddy little schoolgirl.
Paid subscriber, that's awesome.
A paid subscriber, so Kathy's a badass. Yeah. But I am writing a really cool essay series that I kind of want everyone to know about. You know the Adolescence on Netflix, the series about like basically calling attention to how boys are being manipulated by, you know, right-wing bullshit on the internet. So I watched it because everyone told me to watch it. It takes place in Liverpool. So obviously I was sucked right the fuck in. So I have like a 4-part essay series. I've released the first one on my Substack. My Patreon have gotten an early preview on the second essay. So if you follow me there, you can get a head start. But I'm going to post that one to Substack today anyway. But you'll get the third essay ahead of time on Patreon today or tomorrow, depending on when I polish it up and finish it. It'll be 4 parts in total, basically talking about the show, boys in America, American culture. And my 4th essay will be my tribute to the 97 people killed in the Hillsborough disaster in 1989, the anniversary of which is 10 days from today. So follow me on Substack, guys. I'm writing again. I'm good at it.
Your Substack's really good. Give the links for these right now, the Substack and the
I don't even think I know. I'm Cannon Spotter everywhere. Cannon Spotter on Substack. You'll find me. I'm right there. It's the same little picture I use everywhere. You know, me staring at you with my really pretty green eyes. And I wrote a couple essays about, you know, Elon Musk.
Staring into your soul.
Yeah, I have a couple, right? I wrote one on Elon Musk about to get Versailles and then explains the digital guillotine, which was the stock market crash. I wrote it on April 2nd, and it reads fucking prophetic now. I wrote it before the tariff announcement, and boy, go read it now. And it's like, I feel like Cassandra on the rocks with the curse of Zeus. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Oh, the obscure.
Not to go all Greek mythology on you.
Yeah, check out Kathy's Substack. Really good stuff. You know, be like the head of Bloomberg and subscribe.
What are you better than the head
of Bloomberg? Got it.
I know. Right? Fucking subscribe. I'm a good writer, guys. Like, I'm not just a sassy redhead. I have some skills.
I got to get into that Substack too. I started doing Substack a couple years ago, but I haven't kept up with it.
Yeah, I did too. I like started it and never looked at it again. But then I was like, well, I got nothing else to do. Let me go write. So I started writing, and my dog wants to go for a walk. So,
all right. Let's get out of here. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, everybody, for a great conversation. And we will see everybody next time.